This week on the Canadian Tech Podcast, we talk about password dumps, Google's new hardware division, Cell Nest, Bell acquiring MTS, and UberX is now legal in Toronto. That's all next, and more on the Canadian Tech Podcast.
Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 70 for Sunday, May the 8th, 2016, sponsored by Olio Digital Labs. My name is Stuart Clark.
Yo soy Armando Gutierrez. No, sorry. Wait, that's my telenovela voice. Sorry, this is Derek Silva.
Excellent. I thought we had another guest host again, you know, after last week. I wasn't sure what the heck was going on. No. So we should also, first of all, we should say, even though this will come out on Monday, we should say happy Mother's Day to all the mums and grandmums and stuff like that. Without you guys, you all rock. We couldn't do what we do.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So, okay. So the other thing is, this is actually, I'm in the middle of moving house. So this is going to be the last episode that I record here at Ardsley Crescent Studios. I wish I could call it Ardsley Road Studios, but I'd be lying. But by next week, hopefully we'll have everything set up and we'll be recording from Gardenwood Drive Studios.
Yeah, that'll be exciting for you.
It will. A nice little upgrade with internet, moving over to our good friends at start.ca. Nice 30 down, 15 up. So that should really help. Just a matter of me actually surviving the next week without having a heart attack or breakdown.
that would be good. I mean, I could carry the show by myself for a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, I was joking with my wife the other day. It's like, yeah, if you can you just knock me over the head and wake me up on like on the 20th? That way it's all over. Yeah. Oh, man, I know. Yeah, people who know, moving sucks, people. So most of you know that already. But anyway, lots of good tech that happened this week. All sorts of good things. We're going to start off with a security story. There was actually a recent leak apparently containing a quarter billion email addresses and passwords that were found on a hacking forum. Well, three email providers say you don't really have to worry as much. Apparently, a lot of this may be bogus, some bogus information. Mm-hmm. The passwords and emails maybe didn't match up. But I still say maintain something like this. The main concern was, people who use the same password everywhere. So, it's probably a good idea. If you use the same password for Gmail as you do for something else, you might want to change both of them and make them different. Use a password manager, right, Derek?
Absolutely. I've said it before. I will say it again. I use LastPass for exactly this reason. I used to be one of those people who used the same password for just about everything. Now, mm-hmm. with the caveat that it was a very strong password.
Right.
I used to use a very cryptic 8-character password, and I used to change that every few months, and that became a huge pain in the butt. So I switched to LastPass, but just before that, I converted to using a very long password, convoluted password that was 16 characters long, and that made me feel better. But using LastPass to create anywhere between 12 to 16 character passwords that are unique for pretty much every service I use. There are only a few that I know off the top of my head so that I can get access to those services wherever I am. Otherwise, I literally cannot tell you what the password is for most of the services I use online. And that's way it should be. It sounds scary at first, but when you realize that A, you shouldn't be able to remember most of your passwords, B, go back to A, because it's easy to hack them if they are easy to remember. And B, usually if you log into one site once, you can tell whatever device you're on to just remember your password. And if you have a strong password for your account on that computer, then that's really that will help prevent that from being a problem. I can't stress it enough. Dashlane, mm-hmm. OnePass, LastPass, pick one. Get invested into it and use it.
Yeah, I use LastPass myself for both my PC and my Mac, and it's nice, as you say. You just, as soon as you create an account, the next time you're in on any device, it just automatically does it. The important thing is just have a good, strong password that you can remember for your master password. That's the only thing.
And that one,
so just keep that.
and that one absolutely must be unique.
Yeah, exactly. So
a couple things.
I love it.
Yeah, a couple things I wanted to say here about the dump and how the companies involved actually handled it. First, it was really good to hear that the companies involved, except for potentially Hotmail, actually performed some sort of validity check to figure out whether or not this trove of passwords was legit. Apparently not. Something like 99.88% of passwords didn't match up with the usernames or email addresses provided. Great to hear. There was the caveat that these passwords could also be related to other sites, not these users' email addresses. That's fine. As trying to put myself in a hacker's shoes, so like in a malicious person's shoes, if I don't know which account that password lines up with, I don't know that I'm going to go bother trying to figure it out, because there are tens of thousands of sites that username and password combination could then belong to. I mean, I might try, if I had an automated method to try maybe the 5 or top 10 sites and just grabbed 100 and wanted to try those, okay, sure. If that's difficult at all, there are probably other more easily accessible methods to, you know, break into a target's account. So I don't know that this list is really valuable after the fact, now that we know that the vast majority of these credentials don't match up.
Right. And I think it's kind of funny, too, on the CNET story we're actually linking to, Alex Holden, the chief information security officer at Holden Security. Apparently, the hacker was willing to trade the data for positive comments on the hacking forum. So, this sounds like just some sort of script kiddie or something.
Probably. Almost certainly. I mean, that's... A lot of people like this. Not all of them. Certainly, there are very talented hackers who probably prefer to be called crackers. Who are skilled, don't care about fame, positive comments on a hacking forum, etc. They do it for the thrill. They do it because they're financially motivated. A whole bunch of other reasons. This person probably, as the story seems to be, collected a bunch of old password dumps, threw it together and said, hey, look at all I have. And realistically, most of the information is useless at this point.
Exactly. So, but again, it does serve, as we've said, a good reminder that you guys basically hear from Uncle Derek and Uncle Stuart, keep those passwords safe. Okay, moving on. Our good friends at Google. Now, again, you, Derek, you're the Android guy and all of all such things, but this is interesting. They're going to create their own separate hardware division?
They are. So Rick Osterloh, who left Google when it sold Motorola to Lenovo, he is coming back. He is going to lead this new hardware division. He is going to be in charge of the Nexus devices, the Google On Hub router, Chromebook Pixel devices, which are majority are very high-end laptops, but also the most recent Pixel C, which is a really good tablet. And the other big thing is Google Glass. So that means Tony Fadell, who is the CEO of Nest, another Alphabet company, will no longer be in charge of Glass. I think that's one of the biggest takeaways from this, is that Glass seemed to be stagnant under Tony Fadell. They had a really big splash a couple years ago. Since the Explorer program launched, about 6 months later, things really fizzled. And we haven't heard a whole lot since then. It's been mostly like, oh, this is probably going to be enterprise. Well, yeah, no kidding. I could have told you that 2 years ago, that the first real customers for Google Glass, Microsoft HoloLens, any other AR headsets are going to be primarily enterprises and their employees. And that's fine, because that'll help drive adoption and bring down the cost. But it's really interesting I don't think it's that interesting to see Nest left out of this new hardware
brand. Well, that's what I was wondering. Yeah, I thought that was odd.
No, I don't think it is because it's actually an Alphabet company now, is it not?
Okay.
Like, it's no longer a division of Google, so...
Yeah, that's true. Okay, that makes sense now that you say it that way. I still got to get used to this whole way they're doing that now with Alphabet.
Yeah, Google actually has very few of the old brands still, quote-unquote, underneath it. Right. It does still have, obviously, all these devices and the ATAP group, which is one of the few things they kept when they sold Motorola to Lenovo. Mm-hmm. What else did they... Sorry, where was I going to go with this? Oh, yeah. The Google X Labs, I'm pretty sure, are now an Alphabet division, not a Google division, like a whole bunch of things. Oh, the VC arm, which is now called GV, Google Ventures, is now under, I'm pretty sure that's now under Alphabet, not under Google anymore. So it actually makes sense to me that Nest has been left out of this new department only because it's its own separate company under the Alphabet Holdings.
Right.
So we'll see. And they have a whole bunch of, they have an existing brand, of course. They have some PR problems to resolve related to Resolve or Revolve. I was really hoping that was going to work. No, related to their shutting down of a service called Revolve that they bought a couple years ago.
That's right.
So this is actually probably better for Google to keep things separate anyway.
I just looked up under Alphabet just on Wikipedia where you were talking there. So it's basically Google X, Fiber, Calico, Google Ventures, Nest, Google Capital, Verify, and then Google itself, the search company we all know and love.
Right. So that
makes better sense. Okay, that makes sense now. So yeah. My Nest is under there. Okay, that see, I tell you, this is the kind of deal where with Alphabet, it's stuff only the accountants geek out over.
Yeah, absolutely, it is.
Absolutely, exactly. You know, yeah, we should have an accountant on sometime. He can probably talk to us for an hour about how awesome this is and all that.
Yeah, probably.
Of course, we'd just title that show "The Greatest Cure for Insomnia Ever." So, exactly. All right. Anything else about this one before we move on?
No. I would say for anybody who doesn't know, Sidewalk Labs is actually doing some really cool things with cities in terms of automation, smart cities, that sort of thing. And Calico is the division that hopes to make everybody live forever. So quite frankly, I hope that division completely fails and falls on its face.
Yeah, exactly. No, I don't want to live forever. Definitely
anybody should live forever.
No, that's not good. You know, I just want to. I just want to be able to sleep better at night sometimes. But
yeah, there you go.
Okay, the latest one, which one that annoys me highly. I didn't even have a rant prepared for this.
Oh, please! How about this? I'll give the rundown. You write a rant.
Oh God! No, I'll just say. Apparently, okay. So, all those people in Canada, there's a couple of markets where, strangely enough, you can actually get a better deal for your wireless phone rate.
You don't that's say. Usually
because that's yeah. One of those places is Manitoba because there's a fourth player called MTS, and because of that, for example, unlimited wide nationwide calling share plan in Manitoba among all four vendors is $50. Well, in Ontario, we pay $65.
Yeah.
In for data, you can get 6 gig for $20 in Manitoba. That just gets you 500 meg in Ontario. Unfortunately, the party may be over because Bell now, they've released a news release. They're planning to buy the fourth company over there, which is MTS, which is very annoying. And I'm really hoping the CRTC rakes the hell out of them over the coals before saying no. But yeah, they want to do it. Apparently, you got all the usual usual corporate, I won't say BS, but the press release is, you know, pretty well cut and paste. But yeah, this is, you know, anytime this has happened before, strangely enough, the prices always go up, Derek.
Yeah, one key pricing point you left out, and it's interesting. 5 gigabytes worth of data actually costs $50 a month here, and yeah. So that's more than double the cost in Manitoba less. We still get less, and of course Rogers and TELUS also offer lower pricing in Manitoba because there's a fourth aggressive player. A couple of things that are really interesting. I actually met someone at the Explode conference on Friday who I was talking to about this. She worked in telecoms for quite a while. She was with AT&T Canada during its 5 or 6 ownership changes and all that. Yep. She thinks that this deal actually would have happened a while ago, but Bell probably really got interested in MTS after they had divested Allstream a year or two ago to what I believe was an American private equity firm. So that's kind of interesting because they could have gotten a bunch load more fiber if they had bought it before that. But something about that happening already seems to have made MTS a lot more appetizing for Bell. So that's interesting. Yeah. I think it's really funny that Bell claims that they're going to deploy 5TV across Manitoba. Meanwhile,
where my mother in Kamoka is still waiting for anything approaching half decent speeds.
Correct. And with myself, I live in a fairly affluent neighborhood, very close to London. I can get great service from Rogers and over cable in general. And even though there was a bunch of Bell trucks all doing network upgrades here last summer, we still can't get 5TV in Kilworth.
Jeez.
So please, Bell, don't tell me you're going to get 5TV deployed across Manitoba within the next 5 years when your existing network coverage area still can't get 5TV.
Exactly.
And as you've already mentioned, inevitably this is going to lead to much higher wireless prices in Manitoba. And that is absolutely, hopefully, something the CRTC is going to be very wary about before approving this deal. As a matter of fact, I think there's actually a good chance they will reject this deal for that very reason. Because their whole thing is fourth carrier in all markets, highly competitive pricing in all markets.
That's what they want.
And if they approve this, that is going to go away in Manitoba faster than you can say, oh, Canada.
Exactly. Or, oh crap, it's windy here. But you know what? On the other hand, I won the business buzzword bingo with this press release.
You did?
We got operational synergies. free cash flow acceleration.
Accretion in here.
Yeah, accretion in there. Where was the other one? Yeah, so like I said, I read this press release. It's like, yeah, I swear they have a cut and paste.
Hang on. There was one other thing.
Intrinsic value.
Oh, of course. There's one other thing I saw that was really interesting. The offer at $3.9 billion, approximately $3.9 billion, which is a 40% premium on the shares as of April 29th. That's 10x earnings.
Yeah.
That's exactly high. That seems a bit steep.
Very high. Again, but I guess they figure once they jack up the rates,
they'll make it all back.
MTS, you know, exactly. So, like I said, I don't think anyone in Manitoba, the general people, aren't going to do anything. I'm sure there'll be some bonuses paid to some people at Bell or MTS for this.
Oh, I hope Manitobans like riot in the streets over this before this gets to the CRTC.
So let's hope so. Okay. On to other controversial things in business. down the road, down the 401 of the Big Smoke, Toronto. legalizes UberX and Marathon Meeting. They've also kind of given some new options, including a surge pricing for the general taxi things. Now, Uber, Uber has always struck me as an interesting duck because in some ways I like what they're trying to do.
Sure.
You've got an industry that's so controlled that just a few people make the money off the backs of a lot of very hardworking drivers. But at the same time, the customer service side of a taxi, you know, has not been well. And this is what Uber is just kicking their ass on. But at the same time, I don't like the idea of Uber originally where the drivers were not really getting paid well. You have the whole insurance issue. And then also, like, these drivers aren't really being paid a living wage. They keep cutting the pay that the drivers make. It's kind of the equivalent to me of Walmart coming in. But just Walmart with good customer service.
Sure.
I always find it funny how some people out there are hailing this, but these are the same people that are like, oh, Walmart's killing, but you know, the local business and stuff like that. So that's just my own opinion. But yeah, can you go into a little bit more detail of what Toronto Council did here?
I've got some bullet points here. I got the main key things. So the bylaw changes are going to allow private transportation companies like Uber and Lyft operate in Toronto, booked only through a smartphone app. There is going to be a minimum fare now of $3.25. That should help with the with driver pay. There are not going to be any maximum fares, and surge peak time pricing is allowed to happen.
Yeah,
taxi cabs, traditional taxi cabs like Yellow Taxi, are going to be allowed to adopt surge peak time pricing as well for rides booked via a smartphone app. Here locally, we do have a couple of cab companies that have an app. Checker comes to mind. They actually do have an app.
They do have one, yes.
I've used it. It's pretty good. So they would be able to engage in that sort of thing. But they already do per zone pricing, so hopefully they don't move away from that.
Right.
Regardless, it's going to maintain the requirement for taxis to have cameras and flashing emergency lights, but not for private transportation companies. So Uber and Lyft will not have to have cameras in their cabs. Now, on the other hand, city staff are going to report back next year on whether private transportation companies should have cameras. These new changes will also ensure that private transportation companies and taxis have insurance of at least $2 million on all drivers for the normal things, bodily injury, death, damages, etc. And I'm not intimately familiar with this next part because it is very local, so forgive me. It's going to undo the 2014 reforms that would have phased out ownership of, quote, standard plates as a commodity, and it's going to ensure that all cabs... Oh, and the 2014 reforms that would have ensured...
I think that's a typo. That had to be like by 2018. Disabled accessible?
Yeah, anyway, to ensure all cabs be disabled accessible by 2014. So, yeah, I'm a little fuzzy on that, on whether it undoes the reform that would have ensured all Toronto cabs are disabled accessible, or whether it ensures all cabs are disabled accessible in a couple of years. So we don't live in Toronto. Sorry. The Star was a little fuzzy on that point, but hopefully someone in Toronto knows and can let us know at contact@canadiantechpodcast.ca. So all that to say, UberX is now legal in Toronto. Like you said, that's a good thing. I agree that I don't like the way Uber does business. I don't appreciate that they just start up in London or Calgary or Houston and places like that. And they just, those bylaws don't apply to us. We're just gonna go. I hate that about the company. Do I appreciate what they're trying to do for the industry? Yes, for the most part. Do I like the convenience? Absolutely. Do I like the way they operate? Nope, not a bit. So hopefully now that they're legal, the UberX specifically, which is the non-black car, basically me, if I had a car that Uber deemed good enough, I could start driving for UberX today in the London area. So that these are normal people who are trying to make a buck, an extra buck off their car. And now that they can operate in Toronto, hopefully this will even things out a little bit, and we'll actually see in a couple of years what impact this has on the taxi industry now that there's a more level playing field.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I wouldn't say it's level, but it's more level.
Yeah, and I have no problem with, you know, I think competition is good. And I said the taxi industry is a good example where, you know, they've had a closed ecosystem for too long. And, you know, basically they didn't have to have customer service because they're really the only game in town. Where, you know, now they're finding this. So, you know, and now we're seeing, oh, gee, all of a sudden, you know, some customer service improvements. Like, yeah, I remember when Checker Limousine first started here in London, there was a big outcry. But guess what? People used it because they were cleaner. They worked,
Checker.
You know. Yeah, exactly.
I love Checker. It's nice to, you know what? It makes you feel rich.
Exactly. Yeah, because you have a nice big ass car.
Yeah, a uniformed driver. They open the door for you. I don't care that it costs literally a fraction more, a small fraction more than calling About Town doesn't exist anymore, whatever they are called now.
Or Blue and White, actually. How's
Blue
that?
Blue and White. Yeah, there you go. Calling them or any of the other companies. I appreciate that level of service, and I'm willing to pay an extra 5 or 10%, whatever it is, for highly predictable pricing, because it is by zone, and the experience. So
exactly. You know what you're getting into. Yeah. Exactly. So, hey, one of the places you could have taken your nice Checker limo and look like $1 million would be right downtown to Olio's offices. Olio Digital Labs, of course, we're talking about. So, what's been happening this week in Olio, Derek?
Oh man, this past week was really busy. I had to skip Explode Conference on Thursday. One of my coworkers and I went to Scarborough for some client meetings, and I didn't make it back in time to participate. But Friday, we were all there and having a good time. This past week was just trying to get a bunch of work done so that we can actually kind of maybe take a couple days off and go to Explode Conf. Olio sponsored as well, so we were there with booth. Hopefully you came by and said hi. If not, feel free to come by the office and say hi on Fullerton Street. This week, we've been really busy planning and scoping a complete revamp of a product that one of our clients sells to primarily to retailers. And we're still planning, scoping, et cetera, because it's really, really important to get it right. It's a real significant spend on the client's part, and it's going to be a big team effort over the next 6 months or so to get the full scope done. So we want to make sure that we deliver something that's highly usable, looks great, that they can take to market right away. And they have a set budget, so we're trying to work within that, but also meet all of their whole wish list. So that's
right.
I'm not too involved in that one, and that's okay, because there's a lot of big decisions being made there right now. We have assets for the next version of their mobile app.
Right.
We're hoping to start development that on that June 1st, the first phase of it. Again, that'll be another multi-month effort requiring a few of the developers on the team for the front end and back end. It's going to be all new features. Version one was really just bringing existing functionality of their CRM system to a mobile app. Sorry, CRM is customer relationship management. To a mobile app. And now this is all new stuff. So a whole bunch of new database tables, fresh design, a lot of close to real-time analytics and that sort of thing. So it's going to be really, really cool. I'm really busy this week responding to a bunch of RFPs. What's really neat about that is I'm actually partnering up with a very talented design company here in London on one of those RFPs. I'm not going to say who or what at this point because the submission deadline is on Friday.
Okay.
If we get it, I'll be happy to announce it, but awesome. We'll see how that goes.
Perfect.
Oh, boy. I should finish inputting the content into a client's new website this week. Hopefully, we'll launch before the end of the week. We also have a few exciting partnership opportunities coming our way. We've been approved for one, so we should get the paperwork signed this week for that and a check cut. And then we're starting conversations soon for another one. So, some folks we met actually at Explode Conference last week. So that's exciting. And awesome. Lastly, this is more put to your point, I met up with the fiber sales specialist at Start Communications.
Awesome.
On Friday. And good news for anybody who's in the Talbot Center, their fiber connectivity is hooked up. Public Sector Digest magazine up on the 14th floor of, yes. Of Fuller, 148 Fullerton is getting hooked up soon. And we're talking to Start about potentially signing up for their fiber connectivity because 250 megabits symmetrical.
A great big fat pipe.
For less than $1,000 a month is...
I like it.
Amazing. That's actually a fantastic pricing for an enterprise level product or service.
Exactly.
So they have 150 symmetrical as well, which is much less expensive. I think it's $200 a month, something like that. Yep. All the pricing is actually on the website, start.ca. So really, really excited about potentially moving to Start. We'll see how that how that goes.
So in other words, anytime I do an initial install and I need to back up to the cloud, I should just bring my laptop to your place.
Yeah, just bring it to Olio.
And just blink and slurp, it's done.
Yeah, well, apparently we'll have unlimited data if we do switch. So
Land party.
Yeah, something like that. I've as a potential fiber customer, we've been invited to go see their NOC, their Network Operations Center.
Okay.
So I'm absolutely taking the map on that offer.
Excellent.
And maybe I'll bring you a little bit of info from that if I'm allowed.
Start's an awesome company. I'm switching my internet service over as part of the move. Mine's not going to be quite as quick, but, you know, that's fine.
Start at home.
Yeah, I'm not paying quite as much either, though. So, but no, I'm looking forward to having a much faster upstream speed. So we'll be able to do a lot more work. Part of the thing we're hoping to do once we get the Gardenwood Studios done, we're going to be able to start with some doing some podcasting where both Derek and I and the other guests are all in the same room. We're going to get some mics and some stuff like that, and do some good stuff like that, and then we can drink good scotch and. You know, and go from there. As long as we make arrangements for a checker cab home.
Yes, I will. Absolutely.
Definitely. So, okay. And as of course, Olio is a sponsor of the podcast, and we thank them for their support most wholeheartedly. So thank you again. Definitely check them out at oleodigitallabs.com. All right, moving on. This week, of course, you'd have to be under a rock not to hear about the terrible situation happening in northern Alberta, particularly up at Fort McMurray, where they've had a just devastating series of forest fires have gone through and the entire city has been evacuated. Part of that is Derek found this article from CTV News. And again, this doesn't surprise me, especially when you've got the Internet of Things. This poor couple, they basically watched the house catch fire and burn down from the smartphone, or not from the smartphone camera, but from the security camera in the house. And kind of sad. But again, I think of stories like this, and I always say I hope they have good backup.
Yeah, so absolutely, this is a very sad situation. I very much feel for the people of Fort McMurray, and if you can afford even just a couple bucks, please head to the Canadian Red Cross website and donate. The Canadian government is matching any donations made to the Canadian Red Cross specifically. So if you have a buck or five or 100, please send some to Canadian Red Cross so that they can help out everyone displaced, which is basically all 80,000 people who are living there. The tech angle, though, of this particular story is really neat. So two things happening here. This couple, very well wired up. They have a Ring video doorbell on their front door. So if someone rings the doorbell, they can actually see who was there. There's an app on your phone for Android and iOS. Loads up within a couple of seconds and actually shows you who's there through the through the webcam. And the video from inside the house is actually taken from a security device called Canary. And I remember hearing about Canary about a year ago. I really wanted to purchase one. I haven't yet. I'm using an app called Alfred instead on an old phone. It has motion sensing enabled, so I'm more or less getting what I wanted. But the Canary device is very cool. And that's actually where this video came from. So they were watching it, watching their house, very sadly, burn from about 35 kilometers away south of the city at one of the camps that were, have been set up to help these folks out, like give them somewhere to go in the meantime. And that's where the video came from. So, you know, you can, I won't go into too much detail in the video. I'll let CTV take some credit here for posting it in the first place. But yeah, you can actually see what they saw. And yep. And it, while sad and certainly a bit depressing, the fact that you could watch or can watch your house live from kilometers and kilometers away is really neat. And it certainly it's not something that would have been capable, we would have been capable of without the internet. So kudos to Canary for making a device that was, that kept working, even though it, the house was completely filled with smoke.
Yeah.
And for Ring Video Doorbell doing the same, that, you know, it kept broadcasting video through the internet connection, despite the fact that there was, I'm sure, a very, very hot fire very close to the house. So certainly these devices seem to be built well. Again, sticking with the tech angle here. But yeah, so if you're in the market for a video doorbell, I guess you could do a lot worse than the Ring. And if you need a security device, you could do a lot worse than the Canary.
Exactly. Exactly.
But, yeah, hopefully we don't see too many stories like this happening, because that just means a lot of people's houses are being set on fire.
Well, the unfortunate thing is Alberta's, they've had a very dry winter comparatively, and they've had a very warm start. There were highs around 29 and 30 last week there. And it's just, it's a tinder box. Yeah. They've also got some neighborhoods in North Edmonton are being evacuated too for similar fire.
Apparently there's a lot of black spruce there, which basically once you set a little bit of black spruce tree on fire, the whole thing goes up, because it's all very thin branches and twigs, and like the whole thing intertwines more or less. So like there's no big spaces in between the branch levels. And so it's very easy to set an entire black spruce on fire, and that's what the majority of the trees in the area are.
Yeah, so between that and the high winds and just, it's just
bad. The whole, just a very, very bad recipe for a very strong and fast-moving fire.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And potentially it's going to, you know, it might cause the price of oil to go up, because, of course, Fort McMurray is just north of there, is where all the oil sands operations are. And, of course, those are basically at a halt.
Yep. Yeah, although the price of gas has actually gone down over the last couple of days in London.
Interesting, so it'll be interesting to see. Yeah, but I'm sure they'll find a reason to, you know. Oh, sorry, that's my inside voice again. I'll take my tinfoil hat off again, I promise. Okay, moving on. So, local story. We had a young gentleman who was a UWO first-year computer science student. He was a whiz kid, too, growing up. There was the Heartbleed vulnerability a couple of years ago, and this young man actually, it took him, how many seconds was it again?
Six seconds
to infiltrate the Canada Revenue Agency, because they were a bad government agency and didn't patch their system for Heartbleed, to get in there. And so he was subsequently caught and charged, and I guess it's about 30 months later. He was able to steal 900 social insurance numbers, which basically the feds found out. They shut down the website, and they actually extended a tax filing that year by a week. So
they did.
I'm sure there's some people that are quite happy with him, you know, for extending the deadline, just saying.
Sure. And for exposing a flaw that could have been taken advantage of far more than he did. I only put this in here for one thing, and that's that nothing this kid did actually makes him a computer whiz or a security whiz. And the reason for that is that once Heartbleed was exposed, proof of concept code that you could just grab and use was made available very, very shortly after that. Yep. So it is absolutely the CRA's fault for not jumping on it and patching the flaw. Absolutely.
Exactly.
But this kid didn't do anything special.
No.
I could have done this. Yep. You could have done this. And I am not, although I am a sysadmin administrator by trade, I'm not at a level personally where I could write code that could infiltrate a server like this.
Right.
Or exploit a vulnerability. But because of the tools that were made available to essentially script kiddies like Stephen Solis Reyes actually was that day, it made him look like, oh my God, this kid is so smart. He figured out at 19 how to do this. No.
But he was also stupid because he didn't mask his IP.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that really goes to show that he is not actually all that bright. He did nothing really but choose a high-profile target and should have been far more careful in doing so.
Exactly.
If he wanted to just figure out whether or not the CRA website was vulnerable, he could have done so through at least a VPN connection. It's not that hard to get one set up. You pay $5 and you can get one, and you can connect through Amsterdam or New York or Chicago or Sydney, Australia or Hong Kong, just about anywhere else other than your dorm
or
your apartment. So we really need people to stop saying, oh, this kid's a whiz kid. He might be now that he's in his third year of computer science. Yep. Not that day, though, and not for this reason.
No, exactly. Sounds like he's a lot of charges were dropped. He was sentenced to an 18-month conditional sentence.
Yeah,
he pled guilty for four months under house arrest. Yeah, he basically got really lucky. From what it sounds like, he's got a lot of people gave him references and stuff like that. So, you know, hopefully he's learned his lesson. This is what generally happens if you do something like this. So don't mess with the feds when it comes to stuff like that. Yeah. That's probably the best message we can say, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you find out about a vulnerability and you want to test it out, okay, get your own server, test a low profile target, and then don't be a jerk and steal a bunch of stuff. Steal like one thing, maybe two, and then alert them and do so anonymously.
Exactly.
Unless you're looking to get paid through Facebook's or Google's bounty program,
right,
do not do this stuff with your own IP address and your own name. It's not that hard. You're going to commit a crime, like, it's like that idiot who walked into a bank like a Scotiabank in London a month ago without a mask or anything. He just walked in, showing his face.
Well, whoever said criminals were smart?
Oh, I guess that's why they're criminals in the first place. But
that's right. The good ones don't get caught. Exactly. You know, or if you're going to do it, at least do your favorite enemy's IP address or something like that.
Sure. IP addresses can be spoofed. Phone numbers can be spoofed.
Exactly. You know, if you're going to rob the Bank of Montreal, use the Scotiabank's IP address.
Exactly. You
know, make it interesting.
Nice. Make them actually chase you.
And of course, I say that in jest. I do not endorse. Just in case the haters are out there. Okay.
But if you're gonna, no, I'm joking.
No, we're joking. We're joking. Okay, moving on. This is something which actually makes a lot of sense. Global Mail reports PayPal is looking at finally doing a program which is going to involve up to basically free returns when you go online shopping. Now, basically on Monday they're going to offer free returns when it starts providing up to 10 refunds a year on online return shipping costs up to $300. This makes a lot of sense because for a lot of people, they still get nervous about ordering online because of returns. How do you handle that, especially when they say, oh, you have to pay for the return and stuff like that? So this is a really good idea on PayPal's part. Companies more and more should realize there's a lot of companies out there. You know, some you may not realize. I know of a couple of people in the home improvement industry and stuff like that, where there's actually more products on their website than are in the store these days that you can order online. And more it happens. So, yeah, I think this is good. PayPal in the States has started that. They actually are now in 40 free return shipping. They're in 40 countries. Nice. So apparently because of this, including the U.S., there's a steep incline in number of people signing up for the service. So, yeah, I think that's good. There's some good stats here. I think this is a great, great idea. You know, I have ordered the odd thing that I can't get locally. I try to get something locally when I can. But not everything's here. And it's nice to have that ability now if something doesn't always work. Because, you know, here in Canada especially when we go from the U.S. and stuff like that, because we can pay a hell of a lot in shipping. So yeah. It's nice to see now.
I agree. You basically took most of the words out of my mouth. I will say it is a little unfortunate that they're limiting it to 10 transactions and up to $300 a year. At the same time, of course, they can't. I can see why they wouldn't want to just go all out. So at least this is something and should absolutely encourage more online retailers, especially smaller ones, to offer free return shipping at the very least for transactions performed through PayPal. It sounds like this has gone well for them in other countries and has resulted in more business customers. So hopefully for their sake and for, I guess, the sake of all online retailing in Canada, hopefully this results in more business for them.
Exactly. Okay, moving on. We were actually talking a little bit about fiber optics earlier in downtown London, but this actually involves one with the city. They were doing a pilot project, and they want to expand it now. This is awesome.
It is. I'm not sure it's terribly necessary at this point with Start making the headway that they are, but you know, for areas where Start maybe it won't go anytime soon, this is good. So the city previously created a fund with obviously cash in it, where they would be willing to pay up to 50% of the cost for a landowner to get fiber optic connectivity hooked up in their building, and they would pay up to $20,000. So that's pretty great. So far, only two companies have taken advantage of it, and one of those is Webisodes, friend of ours.
We know a very good friend of ours, yes.
Yes, named Adam Kaplan, who owns that, and he's in the old Novax building on King Street. On London is also there, so they are also benefiting from that spend. The other company is, I've never heard of this one, Vibra Fusion Labs, which is apparently a digital media lab run by an artist collective. So I'm going to have to find out where they are. So the Downtown London Business Association and LEDC each put $100,000 into the fund, with the city ponying up $20,000. So now there's a quote unquote, it's a piggy bank with $220,000 in it, according to Jeanette McDonald, who heads up Downtown London. And there is a PDF update here from the city about how well it's gone and why they're going to keep moving forward with it. So if you want to read that, it's there. It's actually only about 4 pages long. Then the rest looks like the actual bylaw. So you don't have a lot to read. And then the update recommendation, which is only to really 1 page of stuff to actually read. So yeah, good on them. I'm not sure it's terribly necessary now, but at least the money is there in case.
And I think what it does is, you know, downtown London, you know, they're definitely changing the downtown core. We're going from strictly a retail thing to more of an entertainment, high tech sort of thing, like with Nash moving out and some other places like that. So I think, you know, I think the idea is it's, you know, a potential business. Okay, I could move to downtown London, or I could move to the South End, or, you know, this will help say, hey, come on downtown, because typically a lot of the businesses, you know, that are looking at this are younger folks who like living downtown, the whole urban thing, you know, stuff like that. So yeah, we'll have to see what happens, but I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing to see. So kudos to the city for offering that. Okay, and we were also talking about the Explode conference, and you were there. I couldn't do it this year, so give us the whole spiel on this.
Well, I was only there Friday, so I didn't get to participate in the whole thing. Like I said, due to client meetings, what I saw was really encouraging. We got some really good speakers. I heard great things about the speakers I personally knew, which was nice to hear. An old friend of mine who I've known for over a decade, Jeff Jewis, came down from Toronto and did a talk on passing like a code between designers and developers more effectively. James Wilkinson, who you know, came down and did a talk from Toronto as well, or came down from Toronto. Kathleen McGainch, who I know as well from Modern Life, she did a talk on productivity. So it was nice to see a mix of some local people who deserve some recognition getting a chance to get up on stage and do a talk. And then some lesser known but very talented people from elsewhere getting a chance to get up as well. There was a woman who I really wanted to see named Jessica Cobb. She founded a makerspace in Chicago, I believe.
Right, yes. I wanted to see that one as well.
Yeah, unfortunately, my booth shift happened at 1:30. So, yeah, I didn't get a chance, but I'm going to look her up and see what she's doing, and hopefully I'll learn enough, or maybe Explode puts the talks up online somewhere.
Yeah, so hopefully.
Yeah, so it seemed to be a really good first year for the Explode Conference team. Mm-hmm. Kudos to them for coming up with it and executing really well. Sponsorship space for the booths and such was full, so no issues there in terms of getting sponsors. I'm confident that they ended up ahead as opposed to, you know, owing money in some
definitely,
way.
Definitely. Yeah. No, I'm hoping. Yeah. Again, kudos to Titus Ferguson and the rest of the crew at UnLondon for putting on a great show. As you say, yeah, I'm hoping we'll both be there next year. Maybe we'll have a booth even. We could do live interviews and stuff like that.
We could. I did a Periscope from the Olio Digital Labs Twitter account.
Oh, cool.
Or Periscope account. So if you want to check that out, that should still, well, no, I guess it'll be down now. I do have the media though, so I will post it up somewhere to keep permanently.
Awesome. So that'll be good. So yeah, kudos to, like I said, everyone there. Two excellent local stories. Okay, moving on to stuff we like. So in keeping with our phone preferences, Derek has an Android-only game, and I have an iPhone-only game. So why don't you do yours first?
Sure. So this is Gengris Puzzle 3D, very easily discovered on the Google Play Store. The best way to describe it is the way that was described in the write-up I found, which is it's more or less a mix of Jenga and Tetris, hence the name, Gengris. Yes. So when you're playing, you get Tetris-like pieces that you need to lay down and make a full row or a full level on a set of blocks that will disappear. I guess it's more like 3D Tetris than like Jenga, because you're not pulling pieces out, but certainly the structure certainly resembles a Jenga, 3D tower.
Right.
I would say it's a lot more like Tetris. Regardless, it's a lot of fun. Good music, it really keeps you engaged, and, I haven't, tried to see whether any of my friends are playing, but it's a really, 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 really fun game. So that's Gengris Puzzle 3D, Gengris, Gengris.
Cool. Okay, mine's actually, it's been around for a while, but I've just started repaying it because I have a newer iPhone now that I can play it. This is a classic dungeon crawl, but casual, called Solomon's Keep. And basically, your goal is to defeat the Dark Lord. You go into his lair, you kill his minions, loot his evil possessions. I love the write-up here. In Solomon's Keep, your goal is to storm the Dark Lord's lair, unbind his minions, loot his evil possessions, and prove once and for all to all your teachers that you're not as stupid as you look. Because the idea is you're an apprentice mage. It's good gameplay. The dungeons is basically 12 to 15 levels. The dungeons auto-generate each time. So there's a lot of replay value. You have basically four different schools of spell casting, like fireballs, missiles, electrical, and frost. So there's a lot of replay value. It's actually just really good fun. I've gotten back into it. I used to play it on the iPad a lot. And of course, as people who know me know, I don't get to use my iPad as much now because my wife kind of steals it for things. it's nice to play it again on the phone. And it's actually, they also make another game called Solomon's Boneyard. It's kind of a similar thing. But yeah, this is just good fun. It's a good casual little, you know, game crawl, dungeon crawl. Controls are like the old gauntlet. You've basically got, like, if you had joysticks, you'd have one for movement, one for fire. Good sound effects, but a lot of humor in it. So well worth it. They're free from the App Store. They kept promising a WinMac version, but that hasn't been updated in a couple of years. But definitely worth getting. Solomon's Keep, and you can't get it on Android. Sorry, pal.
That's okay. Are we sure that the character's name isn't Rincewind?
I don't know.
He's trying to prove to his teachers that he's not as stupid as he looks.
Yeah, I know.
For any Discworld fans out there, you'll know exactly what I mean.
Exactly.
I'm not convinced this character isn't based on Rincewind. So.
Well, they, you know, the designers have a good sense of humor, so it wouldn't surprise me at all if they
mean, like characters named Bone Daddy.
Yeah. Exactly. See, I knew you'd figure some of that out. So,
yeah,
but
absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So, another great show. And as I said, I'm doing a move this week. So, providing I survive that, otherwise Derek's going to be doing this project solo, and he'll have to find some guest hosts and all that. But hopefully not. So for episode 7. I'm sure we will be. So for episode 70 of the Canadian Tech Podcast, my name is Stuart Clark.
And my name is Derek Silva.
Thank you and be well.